Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. When Sergeant Major Cornell W. Gilmore was buried today at Arlington National Cemetery, it was with full military honors from the U.S. Army's 3rd Infantry, including a bugler playing taps. But media seeking to cover Gilmore's funeral found themselves limited by new Pentagon regulations that went into effect on Thursday. The new guidelines state that reporters are no longer permitted to stand at the rear of the mourners during the service, and microphones are not permitted anywhere near the gravesite. Pentagon says it is merely trying to protect the privacy of the families of the fallen soldiers. But the new rules have some reporters wondering whether it is just the latest move by the Bush administration to limit coverage of casualties of the war in Iraq. Democrats fought to force significant changes in a Republican-drafted energy bill Monday as a House-Senate conference sped toward approving the massive legislation and clearing the way for final congressional approval, probably this week. Among amendments turned back by the House after being offered by the Senate negotiators was a provision to require electric utilities to produce 10% of their power from renewable fuels. The utility industry had fought the fuel use mandate. Two-thirds of the $23 billion in tax breaks in the bill would go to the oil, gas, and coal industries, prompting one Democrat to label it a hodgepodge of subsidies for the politically well-connected. Ken Livingston, the mayor of London, launched a stinging attack on George Bush last night, denouncing him as the greatest threat to life on this planet that we've most probably ever seen. Mr. Livingston recalled a visit at Easter to California, where he was denounced for an attack he had made on what he called the most corrupt and racist American administration in over 80 years. Some U.S. journalists came up to me and said, "How can you say this about President Bush? I actually think that Bush is the greatest threat to life on this planet that we've most probably ever seen. The policies he is initiating will doom us to extinction." Mr. Livingston is holding a peace party for anti-war groups in City Hall tomorrow. He added, "I don't formally recognize George Bush because he was not officially elected, so we are organizing an alternative reception for everybody who is not George Bush." More news after this.
Hi, I'm Lars Ulrich from Metallica. You know, protecting your hearing may not be something that you're thinking a lot about right now, but take it from me that after a few years of being exposed to loud music and other such things, that hearing loss and a constant ringing in your ears have become a problem for me and could also become a problem for you. If you want more information about this, call the Hear Hotline. The number is 415-773-9590.
Germany, which has been settled with negative stereotypes since World War II, is actually hip, hedonistic, and laid back. A team of image consultants is trying to persuade Britain. "We are known for being aggressive, thorough, and pushy," said Ulrich Sacker, director of the Goethe Institute in London. But few people realize that strong brands like Nivea, Hugo Boss, and Puma are actually German. Reminiscent of the Cool Britannia media fanfare of the late 90s, designers have chosen to sell Germany with the images of skimpily clad ravers at Berlin's Love Parade rather than its famous beer or industrial stalwarts like BMW or Siemens. This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Let me tell you a story of progressive progress. In 1939, two-thirds of America's senior citizens lived their golden years in cold, hard poverty. Just a decade later, that percentage was down to half. By 1959, it was only one-third, and today the number is less than 10%. That's progress. What's progressive about it is that this decline in poverty is the result of the New Deal's passage of our nation's landmark Social Security program. Yes, the very same program now under attack by Wall Street wolves and congressional opportunists of both parties who insist that Social Security is doomed to failure and facing an imminent financial crisis. Horse duties. First, This is a program that actually works, providing the modicum of income so our gray-haired citizens have a basic level of decent living when their earning years are over. Second, Social Security is a model of efficiency, requiring only a single percent in administrative costs. Compare that to the insurance corporations that suck out one-third of our health care dollars to pay for their corporate bureaucracies, executive salaries, marble palaces, and advertising. But no, cry the chicken littlers, Social Security is going broke. Hogwash. Without changing anything, Social Security is financially sound for the next 40 years. Name me a corporation that can claim that. Yet the Bushites, on behalf of Wall Street finaglers, seek to privatize this public treasure, pushing people to put their Social Security nest egg into the stock market. Hello. These are the same investment geniuses who only 3 years ago would have advised you to invest in Enron, a stock that fell from $97 a share to 57 cents in only 1 year. This is Jim Hightower saying, I say no one should be allowed to reform Social Security unless they actually need it.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding me? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast, it's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live. We're also broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, stream 145, and also beaming around the world on the internet from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and other internet radio stations. Today is day 127. 127 days that they've been looking for a traitor in the White House, for someone who committed treason, for someone who, under the laws of the United States, may even face a firing squad. 127 days, they haven't been able to find him. 282 days, we've been looking for weapons of mass destruction. I guess you could say it's 127 days for the weapon of mass destruction. Well, the weapon of CIA destruction in the White House, 282 days for the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, 769 days since somebody dropped anthrax into the desks of Tom Daschle and Pat Leahy by coincidence, the two Democrats who had the power at that moment in time to stop the Patriot Act, and day 793. Since George Bush said he was going to find Osama bin Laden dead or alive, yeah. Welcome back. Welcome back. Boy, so much to cover today. Today is the anniversary of Jonestown. In our second hour, we're going to talk to an author, an expert on that topic briefly. We'll just spend maybe the first 20 minutes on this, but I want to use it as a stepping off point for some of the other issues of the day. And In our third hour, I want to get into in some detail. I think you're going to find this fascinating. What's the real agenda with all these Medicare changes? You see these stories in the paper every day about what's going on. Yeah, this Medicare and drug benefit and this and that and the other. What's really going on? What are these guys really up to? Why is Ted Kennedy signing on to this thing? What's George? You know what are the conservatives doing? What are the Republicans doing? Of course, you know there's election year politics big time in this. But it's much bigger than that. This is really a huge issue. But I want to start out with the situation in Iraq and our options for Iraq, because as much as George W. keeps saying, we're not going to cut and run, you know, we ain't going to cut and run. Stand tall. Yes, indeed. This weekend, the decision was made to cut and run as quick as possible. And there are some real concerns about that. And also about some of the things that were done back in the name of not cutting and running. And this is, I think, is interesting. Might have something to do with why we've decided that we're going to, of course, I mean, Bush is getting the political fallout. He's talking about pulling out troops in April and then pulling out more troops in June, just in time for November. But why in the first place was this administration so absolutely intent on saying we are not going to allow the United Nations to come in and administer this country, or NATO, as with Bosnia, and we're not going to allow them to have anything to do with the reconstruction? You know, they can send in soldiers if they want. If there's somebody to be shot at, they can send them, as the Italians discovered. And I know most of you probably don't get Italian television. I don't, but you see the. In fact, it's not even much covered on American television. But in the news reports, Italy has virtually shut down in mourning for the soldiers that they have lost in Iraq. While at the same time here in the United States, we are forbidden by this administration from even seeing the caskets, much less the funerals. The press is prevented from attending the funerals of our young men and women, well, and some older, our men and women who have died in Iraq. But anyhow, why were they so possessive of this? Some would suggest, and there's a growing body of folks who suggest around the world, and this is in the United States confined to, well, it's not polite yet to say it out loud, but it is being said out loud in many other countries in the world and has been virtually from day one, in fact, even before the invasion, that the Bush administration had a couple of goals. One of them was what Franklin Roosevelt called war profiteering. Halliburton was not making money. They actually lost millions of dollars year before last. Suddenly they're in Afghanistan and they're in Iraq, and now they're showing hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. Of course, they are continuing to give Dick Cheney his six-figure payouts every year while he is also Vice President of the United States. Can you imagine if Al Gore had been taking money from a union when he was Vice President? Or from, you know, I mean, can you imagine if Bill Clinton had been taking money from the Whitewater land deal while he was President? Anyhow, so there's this war profiteering aspect. And then there's the oil. The energy bill was presented today. Did you catch this morning? John Dingell is just all upset now, congressman from Michigan. Normally, when a bill is worked out in the House or the Senate, they have a committee that works on it, and the committees have both Democrats and Republicans on them. I mean, you know, you just can't get around that. And for 227 years, whether it was Democrats and Republicans or Whigs or Federalists or Democratic Republicans, there were these, you know, relatively bipartisan efforts. And now this administration, in a true Stalinist fashion, has said to the Democrats on the Energy Committee, you cannot even sit in on the discussion. You can't even have a voice. You can't even sit at the... You can't even listen to the discussion about the energy bill. That, it turns out, is... They're giving more money in welfare with this energy bill. More money in welfare with this energy bill to the big oil companies, nuclear industry, gas producers, and coal companies than we are giving in the United States in welfare to homeless children. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And the Republicans presented it to the Democrats yesterday, the day before, and said, here it is. And the Democrats were not even allowed to participate in the discussions. This is not democracy. This is right up there with the way the Soviet Union used to run. I've been telling you from the beginning that the conservative agenda is an anti-democratic agenda at its core. Now, it believes itself to be a noble agenda, and I acknowledge their belief in that nobility. When Alexander Hamilton stood up in 1787 at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, and on the opening day said, I don't have his exact words in front of me, but something to the effect of, there is no more stable and effective form of government than aristocracy. We must create an aristocracy in America. When John Adams, President John Adams, who passed the first Patriot Act, his alien and sedition laws, under which he was able to throw newspaper editors in jail and prison, Congressman Matthew Lyon of Vermont was thrown in prison for speaking out against President John Adams, ran for office from his jail cell in Vergennes, Vermont, and won his unheated 10-by-12 jail cell. When John Adams referred to we the people as the rabble, and Hamilton said aristocracy is essential to the survival of the United States, they were expressing a point of view that you will hear today using very different terms, expressed across this country on right-wing talk radio and in right-wing publications, conservative publications, and from the con think tanks, which is that you really can't trust the masses. That's their suggestion. They suggest that we really should have an aristocracy in America, and the natural aristocracy would be one of wealth. Because we don't have lineages, we don't have families, we don't have a royal family. I mean, we have sort of our version of it, I suppose, the Rockefellers, the Kennedys, but none that go back to the founding of this country. They emerged from either the robber baron era or the roaring 20s and have managed to hang on to what wealth they have since then. But because we don't have a family aristocracy, they have this idea that there should be an aristocracy of wealth, and how is wealth accumulated in the United States? Most effectively via the corporate form. So the conservative agenda is to say, let's not allow workers or individuals or humans to organize. We'll call it the right to work. Let's not allow humans to organize, but we will allow corporations to organize. The trade associations, chambers of commerce, and to buy each other and form monopolies and conglomerates. So this then, the conservative agenda, and so it makes perfect sense that when they go into Iraq, they say, hey, we want to bring an aristocracy here too. Which brings me back around to Iraq and just some of the mind-boggling stuff. And these business deals. I got to tell you about the business deals. Because this, I think, might be one of the reasons why the Bush administration is now all of a sudden backing off and saying, okay, we'll back up. Let me tell you about this right after this break. This is fascinating. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think people are more important than corporations, you need to see the Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or the Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Tune into IE America Radio Network weekdays for the best in progressive talk radio. The Tom Hartman Show.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. You're listening to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show.
Family Talk.
This is Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera.
The All-American Talk Radio Show.
All-American Talk Radio with Peter B. Collins.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I know I have a reputation of being fiery, hard-edged, passionate, outspoken, opinionated, and sometimes explosive. And that reputation is well-deserved because I am. I'm a liberal with a microphone, and that makes me dangerous.
For more information on these shows and other shows, or to listen live, visit us on the web at ieamericaradio.com.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dogs?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, to talk to the animals. You don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Heart on their anger. None of my pain awoke.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. The business deals may be invalid, experts say. This from the Financial Times, a newspaper by this article by Thomas Katan, in London. The U.S.-led provisional authority in Iraq. See, this came out, actually, this was last week. I read this on the newspaper on the plane when I was flying to Germany, so it was a week and a half ago. And right after this happened, right after this came out, they had this meeting in Washington, D.C., and now Bush and company are like backpedaling. And we know that they've been after basically two things. The oil. We know that Cheney was having meetings back before 9/11 in the White House with Ken Lay and others from Big Oil. And they were dividing up the oil fields in Iraq and coming up with a list of potential purchasers of oil from Iraq. We know that because JudicialWatch.org, Larry Klayman at Judicial Watch sued Ken Dick Cheney, and some of the documents have been released. You can actually see those. There's a link to them off our blog. If you go to TomHartman.com and click show notes, you'll find a link to those. Also, you could just go to JudicialWatch.org. It's buried in there, a little harder to find, but that's the site that it's on. And you can see the maps from 2001, from before 9/11, from the spring of 2001, when Dick Cheney was first putting together the energy policy for the United States, which involved carving up, by coincidence, the oil fields of Iraq. So, number one, we want the oil. And the whole world knows that it's not polite to say it in America, but yeah, it was a war for oil. Oh, Saddam was a bad guy. Mugabe is worse. You want to see a bad guy? Go to Zimbabwe. Oh, it was a totalitarian dictatorship brutalizing their people. Hey, go to Burma. Oh, but they had weapons of mass destruction. Go to North Korea. But none of those countries control 10%, maybe 20% of the world's oil, and not just oil. But the cheapest oil, it has not been pumped. It bubbles out of the ground. You don't even have to pump it. It bubbles out of the ground. It costs a buck and a half a barrel to produce, to get. Whereas Saudi oil is now starting to cost $5, $6, $8, $10, $12 a barrel, depending on the oil field. In the United States, typically it costs over $10 a barrel to produce oil because our fields are getting old. We're having to suck harder and harder on that straw. So, number one, we said to the UN, no, you can't come in. There's the oil. So now, and then the other thing was, of course, there's this good buddy of George Bush, old friend of George Bush, has started a company to help sell off Iraqi companies, basically selling off Iraq. And here now, a week and a half ago, the Financial Times, the U.S.-led provisional authority in Iraq may be breaking international law by selling state assets, experts have warned, raising the prospect that contracts signed now by foreign investors could be scrapped by a future Iraqi government. And it looks like there's going to be one fairly soon. They might be in breach of the 1907 Hague regulations and the Fourth Geneva Convention. Many experts believe that their actions are not legal. This article in the Financial Times says, quoting Juliet Blanche, a partner at the London-based international law firm Norton Rose, international law obliges occupying powers to respect laws already in force in a country, quote, unless absolutely prevented from doing so, end quote, which we are not. According to international law experts, this article says that throws doubt on the legality of the Coalition Provisional Authority's September 19 order opening the Iraqi economy to foreign investment. So it looks like maybe we can't just go in and grab all the stuff and sell it off to those campaign investors, those campaign donors to the Republicans. So we might as well pull up. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con in conservatives. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A disease that kills deer proves to be remarkably persistent. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Deer and elk across North America are vulnerable to a wildlife disease that slowly destroys their nervous systems and ultimately their brains. It's caused by an unusual and very tough molecule, and wildlife experts are working hard to stop it. The ailment is CWD, chronic wasting disease. It's been seen for many years in some western states, but last year it showed up east of the Mississippi River in Wisconsin. It was the first time CWD appeared in a landscape with dense concentrations of white-tailed deer. People are taking it seriously because of the risk it might start spreading more rapidly. Mike Samuel is an ecologist who works in the Wildlife Research Unit of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He's working with state and federal authorities to find options for dealing with chronic wasting disease.
We can look at places where the disease has been for a long time, like Colorado and Wyoming, and we can sort of see what happens if you don't succeed in controlling the disease, which is eventually it just begins to spread to larger and larger portions of the state.
Samuel says the density of herds in Colorado and Wyoming is as low as 5 animals per square mile, and yet the disease persists. That might mean that the only way to stop the spread of CWD in infected areas is to lower the numbers of deer to a point that verges on eradication.
I know nobody wants to say that zero is a good thing, but the evidence is we probably have to get pretty close to zero before naturally this disease is going to burn itself out.
In Wisconsin, there are as many as 50 deer per square mile. Samuel says the CWD hot zone in this crowded landscape has become one of the front lines for research on this wildlife disease. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to the lifestyles of the wet and stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true.
Welcome back to the vast, radical, metal conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Hey, we caught somebody doing something right. This is one of the great things about interactive media. I mean, it used to be the radio was just somebody talks, everybody listens. It's not that way anymore. We have this chat room that is live. We've been doing it since the day we started this program. And it is just remarkable. There are folks every single day. It's not always the same folks. I mean, there's some folks who are regulars. There are some who come and go. Occasionally we get a conservative in there who wants to pick a fight or say, it's fascinating. It's just fascinating. And in the chat room, somebody pointed out to me a news story that just hit Reuters just a few minutes ago, or maybe an hour or so ago. I guess it came through at 10:35 this morning, but it had missed my radar screen when we were doing show prep here. And so I want to, number one, thank the folks in our chat room. You can get to our chat room, by the way, just by going to TomHartman.com and click on the link that says chat room, and that'll take you to a forum in CompuServe, and you click chat, the chat button, and it'll drop you in. And if you're not a CompuServe or an AOL member,
then you can sign up. It's not any charge. It's a free thing. You know, it's just they just have the you have to have a screen name kind of thing. Anyhow, is one of the folks in our chat room said, "Hey, did you see this?" and put a link on there. And so I want to acknowledge we caught somebody doing something right. Of course, the best way to manage is always to catch people doing things right rather than doing things wrong. And there's certainly enough going wrong that I talk about on this program. I really like the opportunity to talk about something. This goes to the Massachusetts Supreme Court. Yes, indeed. The highest court in Massachusetts ruled on Tuesday. This is from an article from Reuters. From just a few hours ago, the highest court in Massachusetts ruled on Tuesday, that's today, that the state cannot bar gays and lesbians from marrying. It stopped short of ordering the state to start issuing marriage licenses to same couples. The state did not deny, the Supreme Judicial Court said the state may not deny the rights conferred by civil marriage to two individuals of the same sex who wish to marry. And I quote from the court ruling, "We declare that barring an individual from the protections, benefits, and obligations of civil marriage solely because that person would marry a person of the same sex violates the Massachusetts Constitution," end of quote. The ruling is going to be on hold for 180 days before they say you got to do this or that in order to allow the legislature to come up with something. This is how it happened here in Vermont. There was a lesbian couple who sued the state of Vermont. It went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said our Constitution and the Vermont Constitution actually predates the American Constitution because Vermont was a sovereign nation before it joined the United States. The Vermont Constitution, and Vermont also, slavery was illegal in Vermont before there was a United States. We've been around for a while here. So anyhow, they sued, and the Vermont Supreme Court looked at the Constitution and said, hey, it doesn't say anything in here about marriage is only a man and a woman. And so the state legislature then had to come up with a law, and they hashed this thing out. It took about a year, and it was a very contentious battle. And they worked out the civil unions thing, and Howard Dean signed it into law, and boom, we've got civil unions here in Vermont. It looks like Massachusetts is going to go down the same road. Congratulations to the state Supreme Court of Massachusetts for recognizing the humanity of human beings. I mean, I don't know quite how else to say it. It's just that everybody should have the right to get the legal benefits, at the very least, of partnership, long-term partnership in a relationship with somebody that they love and care for and want to spend their lives with. John Kennedy has been in the news a lot, of course. This is the month of the 40th, I believe, anniversary of his murder. And I thought that before we hear from George Bush, which I'm going to share with you in just a moment. We've got some clips from George Bush. I wanted to share with you some clips from John Kennedy about his vision of America and peace and you know, America's role in the world with regard to peace. He started out these remarks by saying something that today would get him labeled as being a Dennis Kucinich fan, I suppose. But he started out the remarks. I believe this was a speech he gave at Michigan State University. I'm not exactly sure. It was on the 10th of June, 1963, in any case. And he started out by talking about what is really and truly important.
I have therefore chosen this time and place to discuss a topic on which ignorance too often abounds and the truth too rarely perceived. And that is the most important topic on earth. Peace.
And then he goes on to say that by peace, he is not talking about a peace imposed by the will of America. This is not a Pax Americana. In other words, a world ruled by America. It is a peace for all times. The peace itself is not. Well, I'll let Kennedy say it in his own words. He says it so much better than me.
What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war. Not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living, They're the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, but peace in all time.
And then he talks about how can we bring this about? What would be one of the major instruments of the world to bring about not just peace in our time, but peace for all time?
Meanwhile, we seek to strengthen the United Nations to help solve its financial problems, to make it a more effective instrument for peace, to develop it into a genuine world security system, a system capable of resolving disputes on the basis of law, of ensuring the security of the large and the small, and of creating conditions under which arms can finally be abolished.
Now, finally, Kennedy suggests that the United States has never started a war without provocation. Even the Declaration of Independence had attached to it a bill of particulars, a list of grievances, not just grievances. Here are the ways that England has actually assaulted us, attacked us, that justify this most extreme action of declaring our independence from England. And we weren't even taking the war to them. We were just kicking them out of our what we consider to be our country. And Native Americans would argue with that, but I don't want to split that hair right now. In any case, we said, you know, that's it. And yeah, you know, LBJ with the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, it was a scam. And Teddy Roosevelt with the, you know, the USS Maine, and maybe they knew it didn't happen to me. But the bottom line is that even with a fig leaf, every president in the history of the United States that has led this nation into war has done so with at least the American people believing. And believing that the president himself believes, not that he's lying to us, that we have been attacked. The bottom line being what Kennedy will say in a moment, that the United States would never start a war. That we are not the kind of people who would start a war. He recognized only somebody with a very... Well, I don't want to get into characterizations. I'll let you choose that for yourself. John Kennedy about the nature of the American people.
The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war. We do not want a war. We do not now expect a war. This generation of Americans has already had enough, more than enough, of war and hate and oppression.
And then he closed the speech with just a very beautiful thought.
We shall be prepared if others wish it. We shall be alert to try to stop it. But we shall also do our part to build a world of peace where the weak are safe and the strong are just. We are not helpless before that task or hopeless of its success. Confident and unafraid, we must labor on, not towards a strategy of annihilation, but towards a strategy of peace.
Towards a strategy of peace. Now, in today's newspaper, it's interesting, here in Burlington Free Press, the Vermont paper, the juxtaposition of several of these stories is quite remarkable. There was a gun crime. Six people charged with killing. Six Northeast Kingdom residents, that's part of Vermont, pleaded not guilty Monday to a total of 18 criminal charges, many of which investigators found recorded on videotapes. The offenses led to the charges were found on tapes seized by law enforcement officials. The vast majority of the tapes had a time and date stamp on them, Amston said, one of the police officers. We were able to corroborate a lot of times and dates and show that the times and dates are credible. We usually don't have an opportunity to see violations like this firsthand, he says. These guys using guns. Carl Sanborn, 33, of Danville, faces 8 charges. His brother Brian Sanborn, 32, of Westburg, faces 4. And on it goes. They go through all the names in the list. They're accused of using guns to kill. This is big news in Vermont. Big news. This is in the front page, today's paper. They were killing bear, deer, and fox out of season. Now, that was the small story on the front page because, you know, as you probably heard, if you've heard Howard Dean talk about gun control, that's about as bad as it gets in Vermont. I mean, this is considered a serious crime. Six people charged with killing animals. That's the headline by Mike Crawford, Free Press staff reporter. The charges allege illegal killing of bear, deer, foxes, fishers, and other animals. And I mean, these guys are going to get nailed. But the big story on the front page of the Burlington Free Press, while we haven't had anybody die, any human beings die from gunshot wounds in Vermont, and frankly, I don't remember how long. The headline that stretches, the big headline that stretches across the front of the top of the paper, of today's newspaper. Fifth Vermont soldier dies in Iraq. Lieutenant Pierre Pichet, 28, remembered with pride by family in Starksboro. Pierre Pichet, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, last spoke to his mother a few weeks ago by phone from Iraq. He told her he wanted to come home to his wife of 3 years and earn his master's degree so he could become a teacher. His mother had recently sent him a rubber koi fish and said he had planned to have a pond filled with the tranquil Japanese fish. Lisa Johnson, his mother, said he tried not to focus on how dangerous it was getting over there. He just wanted peace. She goes on to talk about he arrived in Iraq 9 months ago, and the Johnsons, his parents, followed the news intensely from Starksboro. Whenever Lisa Johnson heard a soldier died anywhere near where she believed her son was, she would cry and immediately struggle to gather her senses. As a social worker, she said it was essential to be composed. She heard Saturday about the two helicopters crashing in Mosul. Quote, I spent the rest of the weekend in Notch, she said. She and Cherish Pish, who is the stepmother of this young man, spoke by phone all day Saturday, telling each other that they hoped by some fluke he had not been on either of those helicopters and just couldn't get to a computer to email either of them to say he was safe. Then Cherish Pish called Sunday afternoon. Her words were simple. They were here. Army soldiers had come to her home at Fort Campbell to say that her husband was dead. I'm sorry, this is her daughter-in-law. An hour later, at 5 p.m., two soldiers came to the Great Cape Cod on Big Hollow Road to give Lisa and Hugh Johnson the same news. I said, no, 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 she says, and I went outside and I was crazy, Lisa Johnson said. She wandered her through the miles of woods behind her house. Quote, I just cried and screamed. No, it can't be. It just can't be. It just can't be. And now we have President George Bush.
Having been here and seen the care that these troops get, it's comforting for me and Laura. We should and must provide the best care for anybody who's willing to put their life in harm's way.
Now, actually, the president made these comments on the same day that his administration announced it was cutting off access to its health care system for approximately 164,000 veterans. The administration also is pushing a cut of $1.5 billion in military housing medical facility funding, despite the fact the UPI reports, quote, hundreds of sick and wounded U.S. soldiers, including many who served in the Iraq War, languishing in hot cement barracks in Georgia while they wait sometimes for months to see doctors, end quote, from the Washington Post. Bush went on to say,
your lives can be changed in a moment with the sudden call to duty. I want to thank you for your willingness to heed that important call. And I want to thank your families. I want to thank your sons, daughters, and husbands and wives who share in your sacrifice, who are willing to sacrifice for our country, and who stand behind you.
According to the Gannett News Service, less than 2 weeks after the president made those comments, quote, the Bush administration announced its formal opposition to a proposal to give National Guard and Reserve members access to the Pentagon's health insurance system. He cut them off. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't. I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
From Cheyenne to Chicago, from Buffalo to Bismarck, more cold engines in more cold places start with Heat. Heat Gasoline Antifreeze, America's number one brand for fast cold weather starts. From the Great Plains to the Great Lakes, from the Rocky Mountains to the rocky coast of Maine. Whatever state of cold you're in, Heat removes water and prevents gas line freeze-up. Heat Gasoline Antifreeze. Cold engines start with Heat.
Baxter speaking.
Hi, sir. This is Brad Morgan. I don't think I can make it in today.
Any TheraFlu around the house?
Yes, sir.
Well, terrific. Then I'll see you soon.
What?
Yeah, a hot steaming cup of TheraFlu will have you feeling better in no time. TheraFlu works fast. From that first sip, you'll feel an immediate soothing sensation that lets you know some mighty powerful relief's on the way. See you soon, Brad.
TheraFlu. Let the day begin. Use as directed.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williams. I hope that you'll listen to me here at IE America Radio Network every Monday through Friday afternoon. I'm talking about how we can change the world from the inside out. How do the principles that apply to us spiritually and psychologically also apply to us collectively? How we act not only as individuals, but as a nation. Join me. Let's transform ourselves and let's transform our world. And let's do it now.
The Marianne Williamson Show, Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
Not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Show. The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brain Shrub points out that H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, A is the first letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that three different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes...
Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters.
Wait a second. You wanted me to poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And John in Long Beach, California is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
A couple of things. First of all, as far as us invading other countries with just cause, how does that fit in with our invasion of Panama, Grenada, Libya, that we bombed, and our proxy war with Nicaragua?
Well, what I'm suggesting is not that they were all just causes, but that in each case the president had a fig leaf. In each case, and he did, and they did in this case too. He said there are weapons of mass destruction. It's just that the fig leaves in those ones, in those wars, in those invasions, were never really seriously challenged. I think in large part because we didn't see American casualties.
How about
whereas,
Panama?
Say it again.
How about Panama?
Well, that's a good question. I believe that there's been a serious cover-up of the whole situation in Panama. Reagan had a really good clampdown on the, and Bush had a, I'm sorry, Bush had a really good clampdown on the media thing there, and well, that's a whole other show. But
but the other thing is too, if you, so, yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with General Smedley Butler.
Oh yeah, I have his book around here someplace.
Right, and. We have invaded other countries with our troops to protect American interests.
Sure, particularly our agricultural interests, fruit companies and the sugar companies back in the 19th century. I was just saying we did that, and we did that back in the 19th century. But again, we were at least coming up with excuses. We have never in the history of this country, here's the bottom line, John. Yeah. We have never in the history of this country until the Bush Doctrine came along said, we declare the right to unilaterally, by our own decision, without the consensus of the world and without anybody agreeing, to simply attack somebody else because we think they might represent a threat to us.
Including the possible use of nuclear weapons.
Right. Thanks for the call, John. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. We'll be back in the next hour. We're going to talk about what happened 25 years ago, I believe it was, at Jonestown. And then we're going to get back to a few more quotes here from George W. and then into Medicare. Interesting day. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. In his first official act as governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger fulfilled his pledge to roll back the state's car tax just minutes after taking office on Monday. A move by Schwarzenegger, who campaigned on a platform of fiscal responsibility, will deprive the state of $4 billion in annual revenue that it expected from increasing the fee to help ease its budget crisis, and immediately widened the state budget deficit, which is already $10 billion. The order left unclear several key points, including how the administration plans to make up the lost revenue and how the state will reimburse the cities and counties who depend on revenue from the tax, and specifically how the DMV will implement the rollback. When Sergeant Major Cornell W. Gilmore was buried today at Arlington National Cemetery, it was with full military honors from the U.S. Army's 3rd Infantry, including a bugler playing taps. But media seeking to cover Gilmore's funeral found themselves limited by new Pentagon regulations that went into effect on Thursday. The new guidelines state that reporters are no longer permitted to stand at the rear of the mourners during the service, and microphones are not permitted anywhere near the gravesite. Pentagon says it is merely trying to protect the privacy of the families of the fallen soldiers, but the new rules have some reporters wondering whether it is just the latest move by the Bush administration to limit coverage of casualties of the war in Iraq. Ken Livingston, the mayor of London, launched a stinging attack on George Bush last night, denouncing him as the greatest threat to life on this planet that we've most probably ever seen. Mr. Livingston recalled a visit at Easter to California, where he was denounced for an attack he had made on what he called the most corrupt and racist American administration in over 80 years. Some U.S. journalists came up to me and said, "How can you say this about President Bush? I actually think that Bush is the greatest threat to life on this planet that we've most probably ever seen. The policies he is initiating will doom us to extinction." Mr. Livingston is holding a peace party for anti-war groups in City Hall tomorrow. He added, "I don't formally recognize George Bush because he was not officially elected." More news after this.
Hi, I'm Lars Ulrich from Metallica. You know, protecting your hearing may not be something that you're thinking a lot about right now, but take it from me that after a few years of being exposed to loud music and other such things, that hearing loss and a constant ringing in your ears have become a problem for me and could also become a problem for you. If you want more information about this, call the Hear Hotline. The number is 415-773-9590.
Germany, which has been settled with negative stereotypes since World War II, is actually hip, hedonistic, and laid back. A team of image consultants is trying to persuade Britain. Reminiscent of the Cool Britannia media fanfare of the late 90s, designers have chosen to sell Germany with the images of skimpily clad ravers at Berlin's Love Parade, rather than its famous beer or industrial stalwarts like BMW or Siemens. A British performance artist had a taste of modern art Friday when he sank his head into a bath of baked beans with French fries up his nose and sausages wrapped around his head. Mark McGowan, 37, said he would spend 100 hours over the next 2 weeks wallowing in the window of a London art gallery to support the traditional greasy English breakfast. This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IE America Radio or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Let me tell you a story of progressive progress. In 1939, two-thirds of America's senior citizens lived their golden years in cold, hard poverty. Just a decade later, that percentage was down to half. By 1959, it was only one-third, and today the number is less than 10%. That's progress. What's progressive about it is that this decline in poverty is the result of the New Deal's passage of our nation's landmark Social Security program. Yes, the very same program now under attack by Wall Street wolves and congressional opportunists of both parties who insist that Social Security is doomed to failure and facing an imminent financial crisis. Horse duties. First, this is a program that actually works, providing the modicum of income so our gray-haired citizens have a basic level of decent living when their earning years are over. Second, Social Security is a model of efficiency, requiring only a single percent in administrative costs. Compare that to the insurance corporations that suck out one-third of our health care dollars to pay for their corporate bureaucracies, executive salaries, marble palaces, and advertising. But no, cry the chicken littlers, Social Security is going broke. Hogwash. Without changing anything, Social Security is financially sound for the next 40 years. Name me a corporation that can claim that. Yet the Bushites, on behalf of Wall Street finaglers, seek to privatize this public treasure, pushing people to put their Social Security nest egg into the stock market. Hello. These are the same investment geniuses who only 3 years ago would have advised you to invest in Enron, a stock that fell from $97 a share to 57 cents in only 1 year. This is Jim Hightower saying, I say no one should be allowed to reform Social Security unless they actually need it.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
Doug Stepan's Good Day. On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to our program, broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, also streaming from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, Stream 145, and around the world on several different internet radio program stations, live365.com, radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com. This is Tom Hartman. 25 years ago today, November 18, 1978, more than 900 members of the Reverend Jim Jones's People's Temple died in the South American jungle of Guyana. They were either shot, actually, I believe Jones was the only one who was shot, injected or otherwise poisoned by the deadly punch he had ordered them to drink. No, actually, now that I think back on it, anyway, we'll find out from an expert. We have Don Latton on. He's one of the nation's leading journalists covering mainstream and alternative religious movements and figures in America. He's the award-winning religion writer for the San Francisco Chronicle and the author of Seeking, a popular spirituality column in the newspaper's Sunday edition, as well as Following Our Bliss, How the Spiritual Ideals of the 60s Shaped Our Lives Today. Don, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be on the show.
Thank you. Is there a common psych? Well, first of all, I remember at the time there being some curiosity about whether Jim Jones died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound or whether he was shot. Has that ever been resolved?
Actually, he was shot in the head, but it's really unclear whether or not that was self-inflicted or someone else shot him. There's quite a mystery about Jones, including where his body was buried. Working on a series for the paper back in for the Chronicle back in Indiana, and some people think he's buried next to his wife in Indiana in an unmarked grave because no one wanted to be buried next to him.
mm-hmm.
Incarnation of evil itself, you know.
Yeah. You know, Congressman Leo Ryan flew down there to check the thing out. He was killed in an airstrip near Jonestown when he came down to investigate it. And as I recall, some 900 documents were lost before Ryan's pre-trip briefing. He wasn't fully warned by the State Department about this. And that there was this guy, John Burke, the ambassador to Guyana, ended up with a top CIA post during the Reagan administration. And Jones referred to career CIA agent Richard Dwyer and his infamous death tapes, indicating that he was present at the killings. What this all sounds very strange. What was the situation with Jones and the Reagan administration, and what was Ryan going down looking for, and why wasn't he informed?
Well, Ryan was basically going down because there had been some exposés of abuses in People's Temple in the media in the Bay Area, after years of the media really not paying much attention to what was going on, or even in some cases covering up some of the abuses in People's Temple. And so Ryan went down with a group of concerned relatives, people who had family in People's Temple, and a group of reporters. For years, Jones was saying the CIA was after him, the government was after him. And there were some indications that there was a bit of monitoring, but I think for the most part, Jones was just, especially in the later years, was just incredibly paranoid. He was whacked out on drugs, and this paranoia sort of spread through the group. But these group leaders tend to project whatever they're feeling onto the group, whether it's some original, good ideas they have, some kind of a political dream, utopian dream, spiritual ideas. But also, when they go over the edge, that same paranoia, that psychosis, gets projected onto the group, and they get sucked down into this paranoid spiral. And towards the end, all Jones was talking about was the CIA being after him. And what was it or wasn't? It's hard to say. Not nearly to the extent that I think he portrayed it. Although, they were planning on taking off for Russia. That was one of the places they were thinking about going. So there was a lot going on with that group.
Well, could it be that in some ways he was actually being protected? I mean, why didn't Leo Ryan know what he was walking into?
Well, I don't know if there's any. I don't know if there's any big conspiracy around that. I mean, Leo Ryan was kind of going off on his own. I mean, it was a little strange in the first place. I think he was concerned. He said he was concerned about some of his constituents being down there. But he was kind of a take charge guy. And if he saw something, he would just rush right in and investigate. So I really don't know if he was. I don't think he was properly briefed. No one really knew. No one expected quite to happen. What actually happened, of course, the horror.
Sure.
Of that.
Yeah. It's remarkable. Do you think a common psychological profile among people like Jim Jones, David Koresh, Sung Myung Moon, this kind of thing?
Well, they certainly all have a sort of a messianic complex, but I think what we tend to do when something as horrifying as what happened at People's Temple, I mean, 260 of the 913-14 people who were killed there were children, and mothers murdered their own babies, and to get our heads around something like that, it's easier for us to say, well, one guy was evil and made them all do it, and I think we have to remember that was a lot more complicated than that. I mean, people joined these movements originally out of hope and out of idealism. I've been covering cults a long time, and some people think, oh, they're all stupid people or wacky people. I haven't found that at all. It's this idealism that gets people at first, and they sort of really believe what the leader is saying, and then they can't sort of separate themselves once it all kind of starts to get insane.
Yeah, what comes to mind is the Crucible.
Yeah.
Arthur Miller, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote the Crucible? Anyway, we've talked about the Moonies and their media and political empire on this show. How did this little Korean sect get to be to the point where they publish the only newspaper that our president will read?
Isn't that bizarre?
It is.
It's very bizarre. Well, Sun Young Moon came sort of out of the whole Korean War. He was a prisoner of war in North Korea. And, when you try to understand, the fanaticism of the Unification Church and Moon himself, I think you have to understand religion in Korea, which is very intense, Christianity in religion. Christianity in Korea is a very, very intense belief. And I think originally Moon fed on that combined it with this anti-communism, which, of course, he felt being in a communist prison during the war. And but for a long time, he wasn't really that well-known in the West. I mean, he was getting a following mostly in Korea. And he first came over here in the early 1960s to San Francisco to try to establish himself. But it was 10 years before his movement really took off here. But he's always been as interested in political power as he has in the spiritual side of things, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we see that now with the Washington Times and his other
investments. He has lots of papers down in South America, lots of businesses. The Unification Church has, especially here, turned into more of a business than a church. Or it's very powerful. They have shipping. They're into shipping, fishing, ginseng manufacturing, different kinds of health foods, herbal remedies.
They're into weapons manufacturing, too,
right.
In Korea.
There's been some of that.
Yeah. Remarkable. And we're speaking with Don Ladin, who's the author of Following Our Bliss, How the Spiritual Ideals of the 60s Shaped Our Lives Today, and also the religion writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Who did an excellent article for the Chronicle about the event that happened 25 years ago today in Jonestown, in what was then British Guyana, I think, in Guyana, where all these folks, Jim Jones, went down and took this whole bunch of people with him. What was the total number there, Don?
Well, it was 913. I think it's 914 if you include Jones. And then there were Leo Ryan and four others. So you sometimes you see 913, 914, 918, depending on if you're counting the victims at the airstrip,
which was
the fuse that kind of lit the whole thing, the prelude to the real carnage.
Yeah, remarkable. In the two or three minutes we have left here, I'm curious, your book, which I confess I have not read, Following Our Bliss, How the Spiritual Ideals of the 60s Shaped Our Lives Today. I'm wondering if you see a positive spiritual legacy of the 60s. Give me a minute or
two.
I do
very much so. And we're talking about Jonestown a lot today because it's the anniversary. Right. In the book, I actually, it's about the 60s and the 70s, and I say the 60s really started with the Kennedy inaugural in 1961. You know, whether that's not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. You read that whole mm-hmm. speech and the idealism and really the spiritual commitment that came out of that. I mean, the Peace Corps, civil rights movement, this idea that people thought we could really change the world or say transform ourselves in the 60s. That's the best of the 60s. And then it ended in Jonestown with this kind of political paranoia and this us versus them and this divisiveness and this craziness, you know, and the drug-addled cult leader. So those are the two social markers that I choose for the beginning and end of the quote 60s.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of positive ideals and legacies that came out of the 60s, I think.
Yeah, what have you noticed about the real children of the 60s, kids who were raised amid some of the wildest social, spiritual, and sexual mm-hmm. experimentations of those mm-hmm. times, and who are now
that's one of the things
now
that,
adults?
Yeah, that's one of the things that was really fascinating. And I went and I interviewed kids who were born, you know, not just on quote cults, really all authoritarian groups, but also just kids whose parents were kind of hippies, lefties, assorted kind of crazies in the 60s. Kids that grew mm-hmm. up on communes. Yeah. A big commune in Tennessee. Kids who grew up in at Buddhist.
The farm, centers. I assume.
Hmm.
The farm.
Yeah, the farm in Tennessee.
Steve Gaskin's place.
That was in 1983. Was about 1,500 people there. It was the biggest of the hippie communes of the of the 70s. And there were thousands of those. It was an incredible time. And it's hard to find like one thing that can explain what happened to all these different kids. I mean, there were kids in the Hare Krishnas who were like sexually abused. There were some horror stories out of the Hare Krishnas. But one thing I found is the kids tended to feel that their parents kind of abandoned them or not paying enough attention to them a lot. That they were more interested in saving the world or saving themselves and taking care of their families. And I've heard that over and over again from a lot of these kids in different situations. That it was the baby bust, it wasn't the baby boom, and the family was not considered sort of important as it is now. And sometimes the kids got in the way of the great adventure. So there was some resentment there.
In the last 10 seconds or so, is there a positive outcome coming from this?
Oh, I think there is. I think you look at what happened with the 60s with feminism and women, the sexual revolution for good and bad, the gay rights movement. I think that was mostly a good thing. the whole new awareness about mind, body, meditation, natural foods, health, you know, all that stuff came out of the 60s. Changed the kind of food we eat, clothes we wear.
A lot of positive transformation. Yeah. We've been speaking with Don Lattin, the author of Following Our Bliss, How the Spiritual Ideals of the 60s Shaped Our Lives Today, the religion writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Don, thanks for being on the program today. I appreciate your being available. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Tom Hartman Show.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang and I answered the door just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush. What a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This
is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
What's going on? You've been away for far too long. You can't come back and think you are still there.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Data hint at global warming. Today's news, an article by Andrew C. Revkin in the New York Times News Service. One of the last gaps in the evidence pointing to a human cause for global warming appears to be closing. So much for the naysayers who are funded by the big oil companies. A re-examination of 24 years of data from weather satellites has found that temperatures are rising in the lower layer of the atmosphere, called the troposphere, at a rate that is consistent with what has been measured at the Earth's surface. The finding is subtle but significant, experts say, particularly because previous studies of the same data showed no warming have been highlighted by opposition by opponents of curbs on heat-trapping smokestacks and tailpipe emissions. In other words, the people who are running around saying, there's no such thing as global warming. Look at this. We've got this one study here we can point to out of 3,000. Well, even that one study now has fallen. It has collapsed. And just a quick clip here from Ross Gelbspan. Ross Gelbspan wrote a brilliant book called The Heat Is On. And if you plug that into Google, you can find his website. I think it might be theheatison.org, but I'm not sure. But anyhow, there's an interview with him that we had some time back, and I had this little clip from it. I just wanted to play this, his thoughts on
it. It is not news that climate shapes history. What is news is that the heating of the atmosphere has propelled our climate into a new state of instability. The warming of the planet could well be the most profound threat ever facing humanity. And the most predictable casualty of climate change is stability in our economic organizations, in our political systems, and in our weather.
Well said. Ross Gelbspan, author of The Heat Is On. And a remarkable book, remarkable author, remarkable man. I want to get back to the war in Iraq. By the way, our quote for the day from Franklin Roosevelt. These unhappy times call for the building of plans that build from the bottom up and not from the top down, that put their faith once more in the forgotten man at the bottom of the economic pyramid. End quote. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So we were exploring, you know, George W. is on his way over to Britain, if he's not there already, and has asked in Buckingham Palace for them to install blast-resistant concrete walls and windows, quite an insult to the Queen, basically saying that his life was worth more than hers, that her security wasn't good enough for him. Not the only of the faux pas around this whole thing. The main one being nobody can figure out who invited him there. The Buckingham Palace said that Tony Blair invited him. Tony Blair said Buckingham Palace invited him. Turns out that it was set up by his campaign people to produce some good photo ops for the 2004 election, for November of 2004. One of the main photo ops that Ronald Reagan used when he ran for re-election was the picture of him riding a horse in the courtyard at Buckingham Palace with the Queen. And it was a marvelous piece. People loved it. Oh, isn't that cool? Look at that Ronald Reagan. Well, you're not going to see George Bush riding with the Queen because he's afraid of horses. But he figured still he'd get some good photo ops out of this thing. And so, they set this thing up. But at the time they set it up, they didn't realize that things might shake out quite the way they did. And so it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting because the British, unlike the Americans, unlike the American police departments all over the country, have not been willing to play along and say, no, we're going to keep the protesters out of camera view. Interesting times. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, by the way, if you'd like to call in, 1-800-825-5937. This is Tom Hartman, and we will be right back after this break. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. Connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A disease that kills deer proves to be remarkably persistent. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Deer and elk across North America are vulnerable to a wildlife disease that slowly destroys their nervous systems and ultimately their brains. It's caused by an unusual and very tough molecule, and wildlife experts are working hard to stop it. The ailment is CWD, chronic wasting disease. It's been seen for many years in some western states, but last year it showed up east of the Mississippi River in Wisconsin. It was the first time CWD appeared in a landscape with dense concentrations of white-tailed deer. People are taking it seriously because of the risk it might start spreading more rapidly. Mike Samuel is an ecologist who works in the Wildlife Research Unit of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He's working with state and federal authorities to find options for dealing with chronic wasting disease.
We can look at places where the disease has been for a long time, like Colorado and Wyoming, and we can sort of see what happens if you don't succeed in controlling the disease, which is eventually it just begins to spread to larger and larger portions of the state.
Samuel says the density of herds in Colorado and Wyoming is as low as 5 animals per square mile, and yet the disease persists. That might mean that the only way to stop the spread of CWD in infected areas is to lower the numbers of deer to a point that verges on eradication.
I know nobody wants to say that zero is a good thing, but the evidence is we probably have to get pretty close to zero before naturally this disease is going to burn itself out.
In Wisconsin, there are as many as 50 deer per square mile. Samuel says the CWD hot zone in this crowded landscape has become one of the front lines for research on this wildlife disease. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yard, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
People's Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, and we were listening to some of the comments. By the way, Bill Moyers the other day gave a great speech in which he referenced my referencing the conservative agenda. And I thought it was so cool. I have to share this with you. Pardon my my moment of well, he says it so well anyway.
Before that agenda, as Tom Hartman summed it up in a recent essay on commondreams.org, is an agenda to transfer control of our government and our commons to big corporations, reduce taxes on the rich while squeezing the middle class, and privatize the environment while stripping working people of their power to organize and aggrandizing corporate power through political alliances and monopolistic mergers.
Yeah, very, very well said. And it's a great summary of the conservative agenda. Back to this war stuff. Here, Donald Rumsfeld had the following to say back on 7903.
And the services and the joint staff have been working with Central Command to develop a rotation plan so that we can in fact see that we treat these terrific young men and young women in a way that's respectful of their lives and their circumstances and the wonderful job they did.
Yeah, right. In reality, troops were told they were going home in May, then in July, then early July, then late July, then Rumsfeld said August, then officials changed that story again, saying they could make no hard promises. Then the Pentagon announced for the first time since Vietnam they might have to, quote, start serving back-to-back overseas tours of up to a year, end quote. Then Secretary of State Colin Powell said some troops would probably be serving at least another year in Iraq. And now the Pentagon acknowledges that, quote, the United States will have to provide the overwhelming majority of the occupying troops indefinitely. Of course, we are making this change. I want to get back to this, but I just want to go through these quotes here. We've got President George Bush on January 3rd of this year.
I wanted to make sure that our soldiers had the best possible pay.
Yeah, right. Well, he said that on January 3rd, and on June 30th, this from the Army Times, The Army newspaper, and I quote, the Bush administration announced that on October 1st it wants to roll back recent modest increases in monthly imminent danger pay from $225 to $150 and family separation allowance from $250 to $100 for troops getting shot at in combat zones, end quote. So President Bush on military housing has this to say.
To make sure the housing was the best possible for our family, military families. That's the least we owe them.
Yeah, that's the very least we owe them. Well, the reality, of course, is that the Bush 2004 budget proposes a $1.5 billion reduction in funds to military family housing and medical facilities, a 14% cut for the human beings out there in the field. And finally, on October 16th of this year, President Bush had the following to share with the American people.
So I twice led the Congress to pass historic tax relief for the American people. We wanted tax relief to be as broad and as fair as possible, so we reduced taxes on everyone who pays taxes.
But in reality, 1 million children living in military and veteran families are being denied child tax credit help in President Bush's tax cut. More than 260,000 of these children, more than 250,000, have parents on active military duty. No tax cut for them, thank you very much. Only for Bush's buddies, his millionaires and his billionaires. Marco Calamai, the special counselor of the Coalition Provisional Authority in the southern province of Dhekar, criticized L. Paul Bremer's administration for its handling of Iraq. Here's this Italian who's a member of the special counselor to the Coalition Provisional Authority, the CPA. And he, along with the Russians and the French, people are starting to speak out. I mean, he just left. And the charges come as Russia, this from an article in the Associated Press by Robert H. Reed, three troops die, Italian criticizes Iraq effort. The charges come as Russia and France objected to the U.S. timetable for handing over power to the Iraqis by July 1st. Now, this is an odd catch-22 for the administration. On the one hand, they were saying, we're going to hang on to this thing for a long, long time, and our buddies, our campaign donors, we're going to let them buy the assets of Iraq for whatever price they want, and we're going to sell off the country for pennies on the dollar, and we're going to control the oil, and we're not going to let the UN have anything to say in any of that. And in fact, even the Oil for Food program, which was running through the UN, which is the only legal, at this moment, the only legal pipeline or route or money laundering system or whatever you want to call it, financing system for the oil going out of Iraq, even that has billions of dollars have vanished. And this administration has refused to account for them, either to the United Nations or to the world. And they were saying, oh, we're just going to continue doing this. We're going to continue to run the show. You can send in some military help if you want, but that's it. And we are not going to hand sovereignty of Iraq over to the Iraqi people until they have first drawn up a constitution and held elections and all this sort of thing. Now, there may have been a good reason for that. And that is that you've got, 60% of the population of Iraq may be inclined, these Shiite Muslims may be inclined to creating a theocratic style of government. They might not want democracy, at least what we call democracy. And that wouldn't look good at all for George W.'s reelection. So if that was going to happen, it would have to happen after 2004. And so there were all these restrictions, and all this stuff going. And then this article comes out in the Financial Times that the sell-off of the assets of Iraq, it turns out there was this international conference, and it looks like it's illegal for the United States government to be doing this, that companies who are signing these contracts are going to end up getting bit in the butt on the, as a result of it. And of course, now they're shooting our helicopters out of the sky. It's turning ugly. And they haven't been able to find any foreign terrorists. And they haven't been able to find any weapons of mass destruction. And wherever Bush goes on the planet, he confronts protests. Even the Australian Parliament wouldn't be polite to him. He canceled his speech to the British Parliament out of fear of the same thing. And so, it's clear that the politically, you keep in mind, this administration is the most poll-driven administration in history. They run daily polls out of the White House. And Karl Rove is just tracking this stuff so carefully. Every single issue, they do focus groups to figure out what word to use when coming up with a phrase for something to explain something, negative and positive, whether they're describing the wonders of the administration or the evils of the Democrats. And then, of course, the talking points get distributed to all the right-wing talk shows, and the vast echo chamber goes on. So anyway, now they decided last weekend that they're going to change this thing around, and they're going to say, okay, on July 1st, you guys, hey, it's your country now. Good luck. And there are some who suggest this may have been the right thing to do in the beginning. There's a really interesting analysis of this in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. I want to get into that in just a second. But this, in today's newspaper, this article about Calamai criticizing it, three more soldiers died. The Italian government of Premier Silvio Berlusconi was a strong supporter of the United States during the war, deployed 2,700 peacekeepers. However, Calamai complained that the British and Americans had marginalized the Italians. They don't consult us, they don't involve us, he said. He said only an interim authority headed by the United Nations could turn things around. Yet this is Italy, our ally. now saying only an interim authority headed by the United Nations could turn things around. Now, keep in mind, there's really a couple of different options here. One is we can hold power, we can hold the oil, and we can auction off the businesses, the assets of Iraq, until a government presumably favorable to us or at least acceptable to us has been installed, ratified by a vote, and a constitution has been put in place, and then we hand it over to them. That would have been a fine idea if there had been no Iraqi insurgency. And that was the plan, to the extent that there was a plan. But it ain't going well. It's not going well at all. So then there's this second plan, which is, okay, do a, you know, kind of a variation on the Vietnam exit strategy. Declare victory and run. We're going to say, okay, you guys, you're in charge now. We'll stick around and help out. We're going to protect our interests. We're going to make sure that Halliburton's contracts get fulfilled and Bechtel gets its money. We're going to make sure the oil supply is stable and pumping. But with the little details like, you know, running the country, we'll leave that up to you. This third option that this administration has absolutely refused to consider, which is the option that virtually every country in the world has been begging us to do, is bring in the United Nations or NATO or some impartial broker, some third party, as has been done in other parts of the world in other conflicts. The problem is that we couldn't then have the Halliburton sweetheart deal and the Bechtel sweetheart deal, because the UN would be administering this stuff. You couldn't have billions of dollars vanishing into space, billions of American taxpayer dollars just vanishing, with no accountability. And this administration, when people ask where the money is, saying, well, it's none of your business. And people say, well, I beg your pardon. I thought, you know, this is the people's business. No, sorry, it's none of your business. So Calamai told the newspapers the provisional authority simply doesn't work. He said the failure of the coalition to understand Iraqi society had created delusion, social discontent and anger among Iraqis, and allowed terrorism to, quote, easily take root. So a small problem there. Now the options. You recall this is yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Just a few weeks ago, the top American occupation official in Iraq cautioned against transferring sovereignty back to the troops too quickly. This was Paul Bremer, of course. He said shortcutting the procedure would be dangerous. The U.S. is now ready to run that risk, says the second sentence of this article in the Wall Street Journal. But we have done this screeching 180. And why? Well, by ceding political power so quickly, the U.S., this from the Wall Street Journal article, it's an untitled front page article. By ceding political power so quickly, the U.S. is giving up much of its control over who will run the government and what's written into a new Iraqi constitution. That could well open the way for Islamists or former sympathizers of Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist regime, the best organized political groups in the country. President Bush's dream of creating a democratic state in Iraq that could be a model for reforming the whole Middle East now looks like even more of a long shot. This is not some leftist rag I'm reading to you from. This is the Wall Street Journal. In a region where the memory of the U.S. retreat from Lebanon is still fresh two decades later, any sign that the U.S. is looking for a rapid exit could strengthen the will of insurgents while alienating the rest of the population. And yet now we have it's the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Why? Why are we doing this? It's really quite remarkable how the conservatives talk to the conservatives and just, you know, say it. And I quote from the Wall Street Journal article, speeding transfer power in Iraq carries big risks. The political advantages to Mr. Bush of Iraqification are obvious. The clear outlines of an exit strategy would be in place before next year's presidential election. but not so close to November to appear unseemly. So, a good part of the U.S. plan, this article says, is also based on the Pentagon's belief that the enemy is relatively small, disorganized, and unpopular. That is increasingly at odds with the views expressed by senior U.S. military and occupation officials in Iraq. So we've got these various options, and it looks like the one that we're choosing may be very, very dangerous for Iraq, but it may be very good for President Bush politically in November of 2004. This is Tom Hartman exposing the con in conservative on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Women over 50 and men over 40 are waking up to a surprising fact. They're already at risk of a heart attack. Because of age and other risk factors, doctors often recommend Bayer low-dose aspirin as part of a routine to help prevent a heart attack. Bayer is the leading aspirin brand, and taking Bayer for your heart is easy. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen and ask about adding Bayer to your routine for many more great days ahead. Trust your heart to Bayer.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. And we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27. $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boys, come on!
The Mike Mulway
my show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
And welcome back. Truth in Broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Is there another way? Asked the Wall Street Journal. They look at the options, a full U.S. withdrawal, which might lead to chaos or return of the Ba'ath Party. I mean, that's the total Vietnam option. Partitioning Iraq. This is something that a lot of people have been thinking. You know, Iraq was a nation that in many ways, as I recall, was created by the current borders anyway, were created by the British Empire. And really is made up of three different areas. There's the Kurds in the north, who would very much like to reunite with the Kurds in northern Turkey, eastern Turkey, I guess it would be, the Kurdish north. There is the Sunni center, which includes Baghdad, which is the area, and the area is slightly north of Baghdad, which is the home base of Saddam Hussein. The Sunnis have traditionally held the power in Iraq, but the center of the country doesn't seem to have a lot of oil. And then there's the Shiites in the south. Now the Shiites, 60% of the population, they control a big chunk of oil, huge oil fields in the south, and the Kurds up in the north, they've got huge oil fields up in the north. But the Sunnis, who have traditionally held power in the center, may not have any oil, or may have very little, may not have much political power, and this partitioning could be a prescription for civil war. In fact, a lot of people, you know, say this could easily cause that, or it could cause Iran to come in to try and, you know, to try and align itself with the Shiites in the south. Iran shares a border with Iraq that goes all the way down to the south. And it could cause the Kurds in the north to try to realign themselves with the Kurds in Turkey, in southeastern Turkey. And you could have a real mess here. I mean, you could have several different nations fighting over Iraq if this was done. So a lot of poor choices, clearly none of them well thought through before we went charging into here. And let's hope the best. Let's hope for the best. Something good can come out of this. Tough times, and sadly know that no matter what it is, that Bush is positioning himself to bring home troops, whether it's best for Iraq or not, before the elections. This is Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? On the IE America Radio Network.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hear
that, Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, as you know. Expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. When Sergeant Major Cornell W. Gilmore was buried today at Arlington National Cemetery, it was with full military honors from the U.S. Army's 3rd Infantry, including a bugler playing taps. But media seeking to cover Gilmore's funeral found themselves limited by new Pentagon regulations that went into effect on Thursday. The new guidelines state that reporters are no longer permitted to stand at the rear of the mourners during the service, and microphones are not permitted anywhere near the gravesite. Pentagon says it is merely trying to protect the privacy of the families of the fallen soldiers. But the new rules have some reporters wondering whether it is just the latest move by the Bush administration to limit coverage of casualties of the war in Iraq. Democrats fought to force significant changes in a Republican-drafted energy bill Monday as a House-Senate conference sped toward approving the massive legislation and clearing the way for final congressional approval, probably this week. Among amendments turned back by the House after being offered by the Senate negotiators was a provision to require electric utilities to produce 10% of their power from renewable fuels. The utility industry had fought the fuel use mandate. Two-thirds of the $23 billion in tax breaks in the bill would go to the oil, gas, and coal industries, prompting one Democrat to label it a hodgepodge of subsidies for the politically well-connected. Ken Livingston, the mayor of London, launched a stinging attack on George Bush last night, denouncing him as the greatest threat to life on this planet that we've most probably ever seen. Mr. Livingston recalled a visit at Easter to California, where he was denounced for an attack he had made on what he called the most corrupt and racist American administration in over 80 years. Some U.S. journalists came up to me and said, "How can you say this about President Bush? I actually think that Bush is the greatest threat to life on this planet that we've most probably ever seen. The policy initiating will doom us to extinction." Mr. Livingston is holding a peace party for anti-war groups in City Hall tomorrow. He added, "I don't formally recognize George Bush because he was not officially elected, so we are organizing an alternative reception for everybody who is not George Bush." More news after this.
Hi, I'm Lars Ulrich from Metallica. You know, protecting your hearing may not be something that you're thinking a lot about right now, but take it from me that after a few years of being exposed to loud music and other such things, that hearing loss and a constant ringing in your ears have become a problem for me and could also become a problem for you. If you want more information about this, call the Hear Hotline. The number is 415-773-9590.
Germany, which has been settled with negative stereotypes since World War II, is actually hip, hedonistic, and laid back. A team of image consultants is trying to persuade Britons. "We are known for being aggressive, thorough, and pushy," said Ulrich Sacker, director of the Goethe Institute in London. "But few people realize that strong brands like Nivea, Hugo Boss, and Puma are actually German. Reminiscent of the cool Britannia media fanfare of the late 90s, designers have chosen to sell Germany with the images of skimpily clad ravers at Berlin's Love Parade rather than its famous beer or industrial stalwarts like BMW or Siemens. This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, Matthew.
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Let me tell you a story of progressive progress. In 1939, two-thirds of America's senior citizens lived their golden years in cold, hard poverty. Just a decade later, that percentage was down to half. By 1959, it was only one-third, and today the number is less than 10%. That's progress. What's progressive about it is that this decline in poverty is the result of the New Deal's passage of our nation's landmark Social Security program. Yes, the very same program now under attack by Wall Street wolves and congressional opportunists of both parties who insist that Social Security is doomed to failure and facing an imminent financial crisis. Horse duties. First, this is a program that actually works, providing the modicum of income so our gray-haired citizens have a basic level of decent living when their earning years are over. Second, Social Security is a model of efficiency, requiring only a single percent in administrative costs. Compare that to the insurance corporations that suck out one-third of our health care dollars to pay for their corporate bureaucracies, executive salaries, marble palaces, and advertising. But no, cry the chicken littlers, Social Security is going broke. Hogwash. Without changing anything, Social Security is financially sound for the next 40 years. Name me a corporation that can claim that. Yet the Bushites, on behalf of Wall Street finaglers, seek to privatize this public treasure, pushing people to put their Social Security nest egg into the stock market. Hello. These are the same investment geniuses who only 3 years ago would have advised you to invest in Enron, a stock that fell from $97 a share to 57 cents in only 1 year. This is Jim Hightower saying, I say no one should be allowed to reform Social Security unless they actually need it.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. The Wall Street Journal today, yesterday, says of this new drug industry program. By the way, our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-6227, 1-800-511-MAX, and by the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. And if you want to drop into the chat room, which has been pretty full today, we've had a lot of conversations about a whole bunch of different things. You can go to TomHartman.com and press on the button to the chat room. If you want to post messages to our message board, click on the message board link. But here we have, as I started to say, this program. This one sentence. As crafted, the deal represents a big win for the drug industry. Now, what could it be that they're talking about? You know, John Kennedy fought for Medicare. And his brother Teddy is now, I'm
I'm very ambivalent about this thing, about what Teddy is doing. I know that he thinks he's getting the best he can, but I don't think he realizes what he's up against. I just don't know. I'd like to have a conversation with him, but I just don't get it. What's going on here is that the conservatives, if you understand the conservative agenda, which is very straightforward, it is that America should not be run by we the people, and the government should not be owned by we the people and responsive to we the people, but rather that an aristocracy should run America, that aristocracy should be derived from the wealth and the corporate class, that it should use government to further its own purposes, to consolidate its power and to increase its wealth, which it does, that it should have its organs of information disbursement, its mouthpieces, its well-paid it's really quite remarkable. If you write for some of the left-wing publications, like The Nation or something like that, you get a couple hundred bucks for an article. You write for some of the right-wing publications, you make thousands. And it's the same in radio. I won't go into the details, but it's anyhow. There's a huge right-wing media out there, and the whole agenda. Of the cons is cheap labor, devastate democracy, replace it with aristocracy. Replace democracy with aristocracy. Very straightforward. What Franklin Roosevelt referred to as the new economic royalists. New economic royalists rising up to seize control of the government. Well, they're back. And there are two remnants of times in this nation when people actually had an understanding of the fact that the government is we the people. And that we the people can look around and say, you know, times have changed. Maybe we really don't want to have horse and buggies anymore. We'd like to have automobiles. So we're going to have to decide that we, the people, are going to tax ourselves and build some roads, for example. I mean, times do change. People say, well, the founders never intended for there to be Social Security. Well, actually, there were laws in place back in the 1700s to provide for the poor and for the indigent and the widows and the orphans. And in fact, one of James Madison's first actions against the churches, which I'll share with you in some detail tomorrow, I'm putting together a show on this, was to prevent the churches from administering those government funds, because he felt that that would be an inappropriate merging of state and church. But anyhow, we've got these, we have these two remnants of times in the United States when people got it. It's like you look at the seesaw, you know, the pendulum swinging back and forth. When this nation was founded, it was founded by people who understood the dangers of corporate power, and they put into place very specific laws that made it illegal for corporations to own other corporations, that made it illegal for corporations to engage in monopolies, that made it illegal for corporations to participate in politics. There were strong laws against bribery and influencing in every state in the union that tightly constrained corporate behavior, that allowed for corporations to exist, in fact encouraged them if they were, you know, doing good and making money and helping the community, and yet at the same time prevented large national or transnational corporations from rising up as the East India Company had in 1773 when they essentially tried to inhale all business in the United States by getting the Tea Act passed, which gave them a huge tax cut for the rich, a tax cut for the East India Company, a tax cut that so infuriated the American colonists that they threw the tea of the East India Company into the Boston Harbor. So there was this, you know, the beginning of the pendulum swing in the 1770s, 1780s, 1790s, 1800s, early 1800s. We understood that government is us, and that corporation, the corporate form, while it's a marvelous way to aggregate wealth, cannot be allowed to aggregate power, political power. Because it will then subordinate that political power to the aggregation of wealth, as it should. I mean, corporations are designed to make money, and so, you know, by law, they're required to make money. The Supreme Court of the United States has actually ruled that if you run a corporation and you make decisions that aren't in the best interest of the corporation, you've broken the law. So if there are not laws in place to prevent corporations from subverting the political process, then they must. It's not that they're evil. It's not that they're bad. It's simply that's how they're organized. It's like the body. If your body doesn't have in place systems that prevent individual cells from reproducing like crazy and taking over your body, then things go out. That's called cancer. So the body has a check and balances system to prevent cancer from erupting. And in the United States, we had a system of checks and balances to prevent a cancer of economic power gaining political power. And that's why there are no dynasties left from the George Washington family. There isn't a three square blocks of Manhattan owned by the descendants of Thomas Jefferson. Benjamin Franklin, the heirs of Benjamin Franklin, don't own big chunks of downtown Philadelphia. Thomas Paine died in poverty. John Hancock, one of the richest men in America at the time that he signed the Declaration of Independence, has left no fortune. Yeah, there's an insurance company that bears his name. It has nothing to do with his family. At least so far as I know, I'm quite sure that that's the case. We prevented dynasties because we were escaping 7,000 years of European dynastic power. And then the pendulum, you know, and then the Civil War happened. Slavery came back and bit us as Jefferson had so feared. You know, he said, "I tremble for my nation when I consider that God is just." Speaking of slavery. And that awful institution nearly brought down this nation. And Abraham Lincoln had to suspend many of the laws that constrained corporations in the 1860s in order to get war material. And so after the Civil War, we had the Gilded Age, when economic power could once again acquire political power. Once again being it hadn't been able to since 1776. And you saw the Rockefellers rise and the Carnegies and the DuPonts and the Mellons and the Morgans and the Gould and Huntington fortunes from the railroads. And then it swung back. The Great Depression came along and everybody said, "Hey, wait a minute. We screwed up. We allowed economic power to take political power, to seize political power. We allowed people using the corporate form to aggregate wealth, which is just a fine thing to do. Go make money. God bless you. It's a wonderful thing. We allowed those corporations and the people representing them to corrupt this government of, by, and for we the people. And that was wrong. And as FDR said, out of this energy emerged economic royalists who reached out for political power, and his job, in his opinion, was to turn them back, to fight back against that political power. In fact, he said it was our duty, our obligation, to fight economic power claiming political power. And so we have Social Security as a consequence of this. And again, John Kennedy and his idealism, and which brought us about Medicare. And now the cons, the economic royalists, who have seized political power along with their economic power, and this time have no intention of letting go of it, are fixing their sights on Social Security and Medicare and saying, we want them too. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly. And if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying. And we break.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Turn on the lights. Take off the lights. Come over here. Stand on that chair. Yes, that's right.
To the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about the conservative agenda, their attempts to rewrite history, to roll back history. And frankly, I have to say, I believe that the pendulum will swing again. That we went in the 1770s up until or the 1850s, 1860s. With a period where we understood that economic power had no right gaining political power. The political power was for we the people. People were welcome to make money, and many people did. But they shouldn't have more influence in government than the average person. Yeah, there were inequalities, certainly, but nothing like what you see today. And then after the Civil War, we had the Gilded Age. We had all the excesses of the wealth of that era. America descended into feudalism, essentially. We had the extreme rich and the extreme poor, these extremes of wealth and poverty. And it got so severe, ultimately, in the Great Depression, that we reacted and said, no, we're not going to do this anymore. And now, of course, the cons are trying to rewrite the history of FDR and the New Deal. Conrad Black in Toronto, great letter to the editor in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, unjust criticism of FDR and the New Deal. He points out that Jim Powell wrote that, quote, median joblessness was 17% throughout the New Deal era. See, this article had been written in the Wall Street Journal saying, you know, the average jobless rate was 17%. Through the New Deal, like that's no big deal, right? Like, you know, FDR, hey, come on, 17% joblessness. Well, this is true in that it declined from 33 or 34% in 1933 to 1% in 1941. You get that? The cons are out there. I mean, they're oh, FDR, you know, he had an average of 17% unemployment all through the time that he was president. George Bush isn't so bad with his officially 6%, actually around 9.5% or 10% unemployment. I mean, FDR was 17% on average. Well, yeah, on average. When you figure out that when he took office from the Republican Herbert Hoover, unemployment was 33%. And then when he left office in 1941, it was 1%. There were actually four New Deals. The first was the first 100 days. The second, in 1930, was based on Social Security and as this writer to the Wall Street Journal says, a soak-the-rich tax bill. in 1935, designed to take the wind out of the sails of the extremists of the time. And right after this break, I got to play you a clip of FDR talking about the extremists of the time. Because these folks, you know, Huey Long, Father Coughlin, they were a significant threat to political stability. And now we see, again, the successes of Roosevelt and of Kennedy, of Social Security and Medicare, under attack by the cons. They want to move these things into the hands of corporations, even though Social Security, the administration cost, is 1%. And, of course, you will never find a corporation that can administer anything for 1% because it's got to pay its stockholders a couple of percent in profit, if for no other reason. But they want to say, oh, no, but we can do it better by giving them to private corporations. And that's the scam of this new Medicare thing that's going on, these drug benefit debate. This is an attempt by the cons to kill, to put a stake in the heart of Medicare. They're setting it up for failure. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A disease that kills deer proves to be remarkably persistent. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Deer and elk across North America are vulnerable to a wildlife disease that slowly destroys their nervous systems and ultimately their brains. It's caused by an unusual and very tough molecule, and wildlife experts are working hard to stop it. The ailment is CWD, chronic wasting disease. It's been seen for many years in some western states, but last year it showed up east of the Mississippi River in Wisconsin. It was the first time CWD appeared in a landscape with dense concentrations of white-tailed deer. People are taking it seriously because of the risk it might start spreading more rapidly. Mike Samuel is an ecologist who works in the Wildlife Research Unit of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He's working with state and federal authorities to find options for dealing with chronic wasting disease.
We can look at places where the disease has been for a long time, like Colorado and Wyoming, and we can sort of see what happens if you don't succeed in controlling the disease, which is eventually it just begins to spread to larger and larger portions of the state.
Samuel says the density of herds in Colorado and Wyoming is as low as 5 animals per square mile, and yet the disease persists. That might mean that the only way to stop the spread of CWD in infected areas is to lower the numbers of deer to a point that verges on eradication.
I know nobody wants to say that zero is a good thing, but the evidence is we probably have to get pretty close to zero before naturally this disease is going to burn itself out.
In Wisconsin, there are as many as 50 deer per square mile. Samuel says the CWD hot zone in this crowded landscape has become one of the front lines for research on this wildlife disease. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court, Sundays 9 to 11 on the IE America Radio Network.
the best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You can't always get what you want. Just might find you get what you need.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you can get what you need. I believe that we are on the edge of a turning point in America. If the conservatives are successful, in destroying Social Security and Medicare, as they are, and completing the destruction of the other programs that they have under attack, like public education, Head Start, immunization programs, on and on and on, our National Park Service that they're privatizing and they're selling off, keeping our air clean, keeping our water clean. If they continue down this road and create a continuously degrading quality of life in America to the point that people are just, that people are fleeing this guy. Did you know that more people are now leaving America to go to Canada than are coming from Canada to become Americans? I mean, just in the last couple of years, I mean, a very significant shift. I did a show on this a couple of weeks ago. If you were listening, you remember the statistics. I don't have them in front of me, but it was startling, the number of Americans who are leaving to go to Canada. So anyhow, if the cons continue and get their way, and the con politicians like Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert and Bill Frist and Bill Thomas, these guys who have completely prostituted themselves to big corporations, they are just totally front men for large corporate interests, and continue their anti-democratic policies, anti-democracy policies, of handing, of being the political power representative of the economic power of these large corporations. If these guys continue this and they are successful in doing what they're working at, and they can pull this thing off, then I suspect that we will have another, it will bring about another Great Depression. We are on the edge of it right now. I mean, look at the price of gold. It's up to almost $400 an ounce. I remember it was $289 when I started doing this show a year ago. This is an indication not of the price of gold, but of the value of the dollar. The United States economy is in big trouble. And it's getting bigger every day, and it's because of these con policies. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. So if they're successful in essentially destroying American democracy, destroying the American middle class, and completing the job of turning us back into a feudal aristocracy like we had during the Gilded Age, they will lead us into another Great Depression, and there will be a backlash. Another FDR will arise, because these cycles happen. You know, the pendulum swings back and forth. We've seen it happen now in the United States 3 times. The progressive populist movement, we've seen it with the New Deal and the Great Depression. We saw it with John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, with the Great Society, and the extraordinary idealism of the 60s. Isn't it interesting, by the way, just anecdotally, Kennedy talked about how we are not a warlike people, and how it's so much easier to get publicity for war than for peace. And clearly, George W. thinks that the way to be perceived as a great president is to be perceived as a great warrior. Which is really rather pathetic when you think about it, you know. Because John Kennedy didn't lead us into any wars. He worked very hard to prevent them. And yet we hold him in very high esteem. So anyhow, here we have this Medicaid thing, or Medicare thing, rather, excuse me. And the scam runs something like this. It's a bait-and-switch scam. They're basically going to say,
to senior citizens, if you want to have better insurance, switch to a private insurance company, an HMO or PPO, and we'll subsidize that. We'll give you a voucher. This is a voucher program. They don't use the word vouchers, but this is a voucher program. These are health care vouchers that they're talking about producing. This, by the way, is not the first incarnation of this. Back in 1995, Gingrich tried rolling this thing out. There was such a blowback that he had to withdraw it. As Jonathan Oberlander, associate professor of social medicine at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and author of The Political Life of Medicare, says, Medicare politics is now transparently a battle of ideas about the role of markets and government in public policy. What they are trying to do is they are trying to get people to move, they're trying to get a certain critical mass of people to move into private plans. And they're going to subsidize this, and it's all going to seem very nice. Gee, you can get a little bit better benefit if you just buy it from this insurance company, and the government will subsidize. And what's going to happen is that the insurance companies will keep the premiums low because they'll take the people who are healthy. And the government will be left with the people who are sick. And the government's costs are going to start going up. And at that point, the con politicians are going to say, yep, sure enough, didn't work, let's shut it down. And that will be the death of Medicare. That is the agenda. That's what these guys, that's what this is all about, this whole thing of mixing Medicare and markets. That is the agenda. I promised you a clip from Franklin Roosevelt, and then I'm going to go to a call from Vicky. I love this. This is from his speech in 1936 in July, I don't remember the day, I want to say July 27th, 1936, at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. And he was speaking about the economic royalists who had risen up during the Gilded Age and seized political power. And how he saw that the highest calling of patriotism, of being a statesman, where are the statesmen today, was to defy the political aspirations of economic power. Here's how he put it.
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
And then, as if he could look down the ages at Faux News and at George W. and see this economic power wrapping itself in the flag.
In vain, they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution. But in their blindness, they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for. Now, as always, for over a century and a half, the flag, the Constitution, stand against a dictatorship by mob rule.
Or.
And the overprivileged alike.
Yes, or the...
And the flag and the Constitution stand for democracy, not tyranny. For freedom, not subjection.
They stand against mob rule or the tyranny of the overprivileged. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Vicky in Idaho is on the line. Hey, Vicky, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, hi, Tom. You were talking about FDR and how these things are cyclical. What I'm worried about is that it won't be cyclical this time, and the reason why is because of the technology that's available today to track people, monitor their comings and goings, just monitor everything, because that's what allows these corporations to grow so huge, is and to have so few people manage them.
Let me interrupt you, Vicki. I think that you're mixing, not quite mixing metaphors, but mixing problems. Mm-hmm. The tracking of individuals and the loss of individual privacy is not the thing that's allowing corporations to rise to get so large. What's allowing corporations to get so large is is their influence in politics. Is Reagan suspending the enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act and the other laws that followed? We got a situation now where you've got the Attorney General of the state of New York, who in theory only has the privilege of conducting, of looking into illegal things in the state of New York, doing the job of the Security and Exchange Commission, which is supposed to be overseeing federal violations by the mutual funds, because this administration, the Bush administration, won't do it. They won't enforce the laws, and that's the issue.
Well, that's true. Yeah, what my point was technology. Technology has gone to the point where they can track everything. And did you know that there are even chips that they can embed in your skin?
Oh yeah, they're selling them.
Yeah,
they're selling them right now, and they started selling them for pets, but now you can also get them for kids or for people who have Alzheimer's. I mean, these are the markets that they're moving into.
Right, and so I'm not sure that in the future that people will have the mobility and the means, the wherewithal to turn things over again. That's what my fear is.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, Vicki, I understand your point, but look, this is an imperfect analogy. And I want to preface it by saying that I am not and never have been an advocate of violent revolution. But look at what is happening in Iraq right now, where you have a situation where people are saying, hey, wait a minute, this is our country. If there's any lesson of history that is absolutely consistent, it is that over time, people will overthrow tyrants. It may not happen in this decade. It may not happen in this election cycle. I'm frankly skeptical that it will in this election cycle. It may not happen in this decade. It may not happen in your and my lifetime. But it will happen. I'm convinced of that, because it's simply the way things go. Our job is to keep alive the flame of that archetype. That those, in 1989, when 15,000 people marched into Tiananmen Square, many of them to their death or imprisonment, carrying that 36-foot-tall papier-mâché Statue of Liberty replica, They were carrying with them an archetype, an image, an imprint, a meme, a thought virus that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and who I don't much like, but nonetheless he was there, and the George Mason and John Jay and that these people brought into being of liberty, and I don't think it can ever be put out again. Because I think it's the way tribal people have been living for 100,000 years. I think the tyranny and kingdoms and injustice are actually the aberration, the non-normal state for human beings, and the normal state is democracy, and we are always going to have a pressure to return to that.
I hope you're right, Tom. Anyway, thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, you're welcome, Vicki. Thank you. And I really and truly believe that I am right, and it's not wishful thinking, and it's not Pollyanna or optimism. It is that democracy is the natural state you find in nature. Democracy is the natural state among tribal people who have worked it out in trial and error for tens of thousands of years, and Aboriginal people. And the pressure for democracy is something that ultimately is irresistible. Ultimately, the people do rise up and behead the king, whether it was Marie and Louis, or whether it was the Tsar of Russia or whatnot. And there is a line over which a government can't step. And the line, of course, changes with time and with history, but there is a line over which a government can't step before its people will stand up and say, no, we're going to change things. And the change, ideally, is a nonviolent one, as happened with Franklin Roosevelt and with John Kennedy. And I think that there's a small possibility that if an FDR-style idealist, and I see a couple of them among the Democratic candidates right now, was elected president, somebody who wasn't a sellout to the corporations, that we could begin the rapid moving back of that pendulum even right now. I really believe it's a possibility. I'm I'm not completely gone on that. Peter in Santa Fe, I was going to pick up your call there. Apparently you dropped off the line. Sorry, went off into the long rant. Feel free to call back if you'd like. We still have a few minutes. Just a couple of quotes from this article in the Wall Street Journal about Medicare. Please contact your elected representatives and tell them that we do not want a Medicare bait and switch. We don't want private corporations involved in Medicare. This is going to be death. Here, the Wall Street Journal. Republicans hope such a change would encourage enrollment in private plans that would be more efficient and save money. Well, first of all, private plans are not more efficient and they don't save money. Absolute statement of fact. They are not more efficient than Medicare and they do not save money. But anyhow, so they put out this propaganda here. Of course, it's the Wall Street. But Democrats fear that healthier, cheaper patients would go to private plans, letting costlier, older, and sick patients likely to remain in traditional Medicare. That would be expensive for the government, Democrats say. The pilot program would be allowed in up to 6 locations around the country beginning in 2010. This will be the beginning of the end of Medicare. And it's not just Medicare that's at stake here. It's the whole idea of what kind of world do we want to live in? What kind of nation do we want to live in? Do we want to live in a country where we are terrified of losing our health insurance? Do we want to live in a country where a living wage is not available to people? Or do we want to live in a nation where people can raise their families, can have a decent job, and can have some level of security? I think the latter. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Powell, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Hey, Sneezy, go to sleep.
I can't.
You could if you take NyQuil. It'll help your symptoms. So you'll sleep great. You know, like you do when you cuddle on the couch with a warm fleece blanket, a cozy fire, and a chick flick.
Now that's my kind of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that.
NyQuil. The nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved Liquicaps.
The Mike Molloy.
Eye Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to
go on. Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer?
Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman exposing the con in conservative. Our show today produced by Louise Hartman in Vermont and Joe McPherson in Atlanta. Our board operator and engineer in Detroit is Shar Jones. Thanks for the great job all of you done. Big news. Rush Holt has secured three Republican co-sponsors on H.R. 2239. Just got this in from a reliable friend. Details to follow shortly. You'll recall Rush was on this program. Then we had Bernie Sanders on the program. I said, do you know about the bill? He said, no. We told him about it on the air. Then I saw Bernie for dinner a couple, 3 weeks ago, and he said, hey, I tracked down Rush Holt, and I co-signed his bill. So now he's got three Republicans on there as well. Diana in our chat room sends me a note. She says, I called AARP, the Association of Retired Persons, American Association, to protest its approval of the revisions of the Medicare bill. The person on the other end implored me to try to understand how good the bill would be for the poor. I then complained to the fact that the AARP seems to actually be pushing the bill, seeing as how it plans on spending $6 or $8 million. The AARP endorsement is dangerous. I agree. Ted Kennedy's endorsing this thing, too. He was suckered on the education, the No Child Left Behind. I think he's being suckered again. I don't get it. I don't understand why Kennedy is taking this. Philip in Florida is on the line. Hey, Philip, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it or not, but the Newsweek poll that came out Monday that said only 44% of the people wanted to reelect Bush, and something like 46% said they'd vote for an unnamed Democrat.
Alfred E. Newman. It's pretty remarkable. I think you have to keep in mind, though, that previous presidents who ended up getting reelected, Reagan in particular, had fairly low poll ratings, in some cases below 50%, before the midterm elections. I mean, he's going to have $250 million
in his pocket. I know, but listen, if you went bankrupt, if you lost your job, if you were designing chips and now you're driving a school bus like I know of people doing, you know, all the amount of advertising isn't going to change things. And you know as well as I do that if you were president of the United States and you were facing an election in a year, you'd sure rather have your reelect numbers at 55, 60% than 44.
Yeah. No, I agree, Philip, and I think that it's a problem. I don't think, though, that it's going to be easy to defeat Bush. He also, the economy is starting to bounce back. I mean, he's borrowed a couple of $1 trillion from our children and poured it into the economy here right now, mostly to the wealthy, Halliburton and whatnot, but it's trickling down. And so, you know, we're going to see the results of that. It's going to be tough. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. And thanks, Philip, for the call. We'll see you tomorrow.